This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
If you wrap foil around that, just like the little bit of the base part of the banana where the fruit is, wrap foil around that top and they will last longer.
You know, I'm something of a scientist myself.
Who needs your bananas to last longer, though?
Look, I don't want to go to the store every other day for bananas.
They're 8 cents each.
What the hell are you talking about? What is going on?
You're
going
to wrap them in foil?
They're better when they're just a little green. Yeah.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Too much work.
Not that much trouble, Rich.
Too much work.
Says the guy that's got a spreadsheet with 3,000 fantasy teams.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
Priorities, I guess, is really all. Go ahead, wrap your bananas. See what I care. Just, why not? I might, you know, not want to. Go touch some grass instead. But Bulldog, that's what he's into. He seems like a happy guy. Guess it's working for him. Joining me now on the Wester Hotline is also someone I consider to be a pretty happy guy, the way I see him, Tyler Dunn, golongtd.com, especially when you're hanging out in New York with friends for a wedding. Seem happy.
Yes, I ran into Bulldog at the airport. It was nice.
You did? How about that?
Yeah, he was heading to, what was it, a cruise? Or he was doing his own little vacay, not quite a wedding.
Right.
But it was a nice little 5 a.m. Conversation there. I think we both had a little coffee in us, so we were awake. It was enjoyable.
Puerto Rico, yeah. Not a cruise guy at all, Bulldog. He's traveled a lot the last few years, but I don't think we'll ever see him on a boat. At least the size of, you know, many houses anyway. So, Tyler, I was reading, you know this, Bob McGinn on the wide receivers in this draft class earlier today. Didn't really need to start with this, but I'm thinking about it, having read from your website earlier today, and I am spooked. This is WGR. This is the wide receiver train station here. Like, always with the wide receiver thirst when it comes to those of us here. But your guy has some sources, some scouts who really don't like most of these guys very much at all, it seems.
Exactly. Yeah, it sounds like one of the worst wide receiver classes in recent memory. And, you know, just for a little background, you know, Bob McGinn's done this draft series for 41 years. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's talking to these scouts and execs all the time. So he's as plugged in as anybody I've ever met in the business. And he's beholden to nobody, which is, you know, our whole reason for existence, right? That's why I love just readers subscribing to support this thing. So it's going to be the real. It's going to be the good, the bad, the ugly. I know we can kind of flip our TVs on, and it's all puppies and rainbows when it comes to the NFL draft, but I can remember this time a couple years ago, like Malik Willis was projected second or third overall. So, and we're watching these highlights of him running all over the field for Liberty. It's a crazy time of year. Everybody gets hyped up beyond belief. So I always look forward to Bob's analysis because it's rooted in those endless conversations with scouts from around the NFL. And yeah, this class is full of red flags and, you know, in so many words, prima donnas, guys who aren't necessarily going to work hard on the other 6 days of the week. But you know what, too, Mike? Like, that's part of the position. I feel like at the wide receiver position, at the cornerback position, edge, you're going to have some personality red flags, and you've got to take a chance on somebody, and it's just a matter of taking the right gamble and hitting it.
Yeah, and I don't want to stereotype. I mean, obviously, that's the reputation of wide receivers for the most part already. But let's maybe give these guys a little bit of a break. I mean, we're talking about 20 years old, and they're making money, which is a new thing for the college athlete, the college stars. So there should be some of that. We know, of course, there are many receivers who might have been thought to have attitude problems who've made the league and done amazingly well. I think, Tyler, the importance of the position still dictates that these guys are going to get picked. I mean, it's not going to be, you know, a slide where they all go to Saturday or anything like that. I would think you could still have around, my guess would be, you still have around a dozen that go by the end of round three.
Oh, I totally agree with every single thing you just said. Like, I'm not saying if you need a wide receiver, you should, you know, sit this draft out and sign a veteran who goes to church every Sunday. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to have to take a chance if you're interested in winning. And you're right, 20 years old, 21 years old, we've all made some mistakes at that age, and you throw in millions of dollars, and, you know, they're surrounded by a lot of yes men, yes women. Agents are getting to them now, and they're, what, 15 years old in some cases?
Yeah.
So it's a different world. I'll say this, though, exactly at this point, 365 days ago, when Bob dropped his wide receiver story, a lot of it focused around A.D. Mitchell at Texas, and he was a diabetic and didn't always take his meds. And this is not coming from me or Bob. I mean, these scouts, coaches concerned about that on top of what it did to his personality, what he's like day to day, what his workouts. I had one coach reach out unsolicited to me when this thing went viral and said it was the worst workout he's ever seen in his life. Like, the kid just upright quit. I mean, it was a lot of scathing analysis on the person, on the player. And then the Colts drafted him in the second round. And I guess a GM is going to do this, but Chris Ballard just mother-effed us up and down and just ripped Bob, ripped the reports, all of this, as is his right, standing by his guy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, A.D. Mitchell was a disaster last year as a rookie. That's not to say his career's over, but his rookie year went about as terribly as it possibly could have gone. So maybe these scouts do know what the hell they're talking about when they criticize a prospect.
Sometimes. Tyler Dunn, my guest here on the Wester Hotline. I'm Mike Shope. Bulldog is off today, as Tyler has confirmed. The Bills and this position also, like, this is the continuing saga, Tyler, on our radio station. Like, how likely for you is it that they pick a wide receiver by, again, the end of the second day? They've added Joshua Palmer. Hollins is gone. Cooper, it appears, will be gone. He's not signed anywhere else yet, as far as I know. I keep coming back to that they transformed, going back to the previous season, into more of a running team, six linemen on the field. And in the end, their quarterback won an MVP award without a clear wide receiver one, to put it mildly. So I kind of think, well, that worked. And I'd expect more of that, which explains kind of how there hasn't been a bigger move, partly explains, at wide receiver this year. How do you think it ends up?
I think that this draft is going to be pretty defense heavy, especially at the top. It just, all of the signs kind of point it to that direction. I mean, they've got some new coaches, especially on the D-line. They signed three D-linemen, two of which are suspended. But, I mean, Joey Bosa, if he's healthy, I mean, that's a massive if. what a steal that is for 14 mil. But I still feel like it's going to be defense heavy, and McDermott is going to want to add a piece with his fingerprints all over this draft selection. I don't know, it's a gut feeling more than anything, but just the way these seasons keep ending, short of changes bigger than personnel, which they're not going to happen, maybe the head coach calls plays at some point. I don't know. I mean, he has his trust in Bobby Babbage, had a lot of nice things to say. The changes are going to be personnel and finding a piece for that side of the ball. Cause I think that they've dropped some hints too. I mean, Brandon Bean in so many words, I think you got to agree with him when he says, look, the offense averaged 30 plus points a game, rushed for 30 plus touchdowns, threw for 30 plus touchdowns. Like, yeah, there's reasons to be disappointed when the ball flutters off of Dalton Kincaid's hands when he's diving for that, and Keon Coleman disappears at the end of the year. But I never really thought they were going to do anything drastic on that side of the ball and part with draft capital or sign a big money deal after they just kind of ate all the Stephon Diggs money. It's all about Dalton Kincaid, Keon Coleman, your top two picks in back-to-back years, taking massive steps. I mean, and they're telling us this. I mean, it's really rare, I feel like, for any GM to sit there 48 hours after a season ends and say, like, paraphrasing, like, Keon Coleman's got to respond better when he has an injury. He's got to fight through it. And Dalton Kincaid needs to get stronger. They were blunt. So I feel like they kind of set that tone early in the offseason that offensively improvements coming from within, as it should, from two of your top picks.
I know they're young, and in Coleman's case, a rookie, but I'm not super optimistic here on really either guy, Tyler. And part of it is the tone and what you're describing, but that's not going to have to mean a lot. And maybe they will get the changes from the players that they need. But I don't want to hear that they need my supposed seam-stretching tight end to get stronger. Like,
yeah.
To running the risk of overreacting to that, that can also mean, like, sort of maintenance, durability, not just sort of, like, weight and strength and what that might mean for what kind of role he's going to play. But, yeah, I didn't love hearing that.
Right, because what does that entail? Like, I don't know, man. And they drafted Dalton Kincaid, right, aggressively traded up for Dalton Kincaid. Weren't Brandon Bean's words like they see a lot of Cole Beasley in him in terms of how he can kind of nestle into those pockets of a defense, and there's a twitchiness. And I mean, you drafted him because he is a weapon and a seam stretcher, and he's been around these tight ends. I mean, Brandon Bean was in Carolina when they've got Greg Olsen and Jeremy Shockey, which, by the way, Jeremy Shockey saved somebody's life when he was in Carolina. Somebody's choking in training camp. Shockey just gets up from his seat, performs the Heimlich, saves his life, sits back down, and finishes his stake. I'm pretty sure Brandon Bean was around for that. So he knows the importance of a good tight end.
As do you.
I mean, maybe we are.
Yes.
I was going to throw the shameless plug in, but I'll stop myself, Mike. I'll stop.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that I don't want to read into his words too much. Like when he says he has to beef up, get stronger, I don't think he's going to like Mark Bruner extremes, right? Like, Jay Remersma. I don't think that's what Bean envisions. I think he still knows that Kincaid needs to be a downfield weapon, somebody they go to on third and eight with everything on the line. Not necessarily inline blocker for an offense that's going to run the ball 40-plus times.
Let's hope. Tyler Dunn on the line. Mike Shope here. This is WGR. You know, one thing I've been thinking about, and we've been talking about a little, as far away as the season still is, and there are going to be lots more changes. Of course, we still have the draft yet. So the last 2 years in the AFC, same four division winners each of the two seasons, same four semifinalists in the playoffs, KC, Buffalo, Baltimore, and Houston. They all have, to varying degrees, good to great, young quarterbacks, or at least not old. And, you know, on the surface at least, maybe it's crazy to think, especially if you eliminate the Texans, who were not a great team, that the top teams will falter at all without like an injury or something that would obviously cause that or could. I just wonder, though, in the NFL, you get used to, for years, it's been like how changeable and unpredictable it is. And I wonder if the AFC right now going into next year is really testing that. You have not only the top teams, Tyler, but a half dozen or so that seem like there's almost no chance you could imagine them winning. Jets, I guess the draft with its Cam Ward or Sanders even, like Titans, Browns could change a little bit. But some of the bad teams don't look like they're exactly set up to make a big move necessarily. So I wonder if you see the conference sort of like staying the course, top teams dominate, and there's a lot of bottom feeders like there was last year, or if you could see some movement, maybe a New England or somebody as a team that you think maybe people will be wrong to write off.
I like the question. I mean, first of all, to besmirch Kenny Pickett and the
yes.
Cleveland Browns, like, I mean, we can't forget about a team like that. It's true, though. It is just Allen, Mahomes, Burrow. I think you put Cincinnati in there. I know their defense was an atrocity last year, but, I mean, those weapons, they can just outscore you any given day. Allen, Burrow, Mahomes, Lamar. As long as these guys are in their prime, I mean, these are the quarterbacks. These are the teams that are going to be in the mix every single year. And as long as they stay healthy, it does kind of zap some of the fun out of it. I mean, maybe Stroud enters that discussion, but he was bad for stretches last season too, and they just remade his whole offensive line. Like, I think it just underscores the significance in, right, newsflash, you need a star quarterback to be central to everything you do if you're interested in winning Super Bowls. And it kind of leads teams to do some desperate things. And you've seen teams trying to get creative and get funky. And, I mean, I guess Pittsburgh now, they make the trade for DK Metcalf, and they've got TJ Watt still, you know, in his prime, Cam Hayward's holding on, Minka Fitzpatrick, like, everywhere around the position, they're built to win now contractually. Mike Tomlin's always knocking on the door, but the blind spot for that team is the quarterback position. They just cannot get it right. They hung on to Ben Roethlisberger too long. They drafted the wrong guy in Kenny Pickett. They went by on the cheap with Russ Wilson, Justin Fields. Hell, you get what you pay for, and both ended up being really, really bad and not on the same levels, the top guys. And now desperation is leading them to Aaron Rodgers, who will nuke the building. And Mike Tomlin will never get fired, I guess, but it's not going to end well. So I think that's why you just see teams take chances at quarterback in the draft, like gut their capital for a top pick on the chance that maybe he's a guy that can one day compete with those four aforementioned quarterbacks, because I don't really know who enters that discussion. Like, you'd love to say Herbert. I feel like we've been talking about Herbert forever, and he hasn't taken that step. Sean Payton, Bo Nix, maybe, but I don't think Nix is ready to come close to stepping into the ring with those top four quarterbacks. And so, and then the Dolphins, right, they've been teasing us forever. I don't know. It seems simplistic, but if you're going to project one of those other teams and other quarterbacks to get to the AFC Championship game, let alone win it, I think you're just guessing. You're just throwing a dart. I mean, this is what it's going to be for the foreseeable future.
Even Trevor Lawrence, maybe. I can kind of imagine that. I mean, he's been to the playoffs. I can kind of imagine it, but they're coming from pretty far back after last year. Obligatory Aaron Rodgers question. You mentioned it already with the Steelers and the dalliance there, whatever it is. It's interesting to imagine him playing for Tomlin. Because Rodgers has been this, I mean, this is a very nice word for it, but this dominant presence, and coaches with him have just kind of seemed like, I don't know, unable or unwilling to push back, I guess maybe that's a fair way to put it. Is Tomlin going to be like that? Will it matter, right? I mean, Rodgers is going to play the quarterback position, and maybe there doesn't need to be much going on between any given quarterback and head coach. But I wonder if Tomlin might be, you know, able to make Rodgers kind of like seem sane.
Yeah, you're hopeless romantic, Mike. I
yes.
give you credit.
I'm saying maybe. Just maybe.
I mean, he's the best quarterback they've had since Ben Roethlisberger, so they'll have that going for him. You know, Mike Tomlin has always just kind of given all offensive responsibilities and delegated the quarterback position and the quarterback responsibilities to other people, to his detriment. I mean, Matt Canada should have never been hired and should have never have lasted as long as he lasted. I've talked to Steeler players about that offense, and their eyes rolled to the back of their head. I mean, it was so predictable. Defenses knew exactly what they were going to run before the snap, and to a fault, Tomlin was loyal. Tomlin just stuck to his defense and his big picture approach of, we're going to muck this game up and Miles Killebrew is going to block a kick and TJ Watt's going to tip a pass and we're going to win this disgusting 13-9 game. And there's some beauty to that. Like, there's an art to that, I suppose, because the Steelers win those kinds of games, but he's just not getting involved with the quarterback position, not getting involved with the offense. And I think with Aaron Rodgers, he's probably thinking, well, what's our better alternative here? He's the best on the market. And I guess 3 years ago, he won an MVP. I think Aaron Rodgers is coming in with full autonomy. Nobody's telling him what to do. Tomlin's not telling him what to do. Arthur Smith's not telling him what to do. DK Metcalf, George Pickett. Like, he's coming in, and he's going to run his offense. He's going to do it his way, and that's that. He's not going to change at 41. No chance, no way. I don't care what he says on Pat McAfee. Like, Aaron Rodgers is Aaron Rodgers to the end, and it's not going to end well. I mean, he's, aside from all the BS that you got to deal with on the other 6 days of the week, he's just old, and he can't move like he once moved, and you know, against good teams, he was terrible last year. I mean, the stats are all puffed up from beating up on Jacksonville and whatnot. The Steelers are stuck. I don't know what you do if you're the Steelers at quarterback. So, hell, I mean, you might as well make it dramatic and theatrical and interesting. And we'll care about the Steelers. And it's going to end in 8-9 and no playoffs for the first time. There you go.
There's a prediction. One more for you, Tyler. I know you've spent time with Jameis Winston before. He goes to the Giants, and the Giants are one of these bad teams where maybe like they have to win this year for the sake of their coach and or GM. And so maybe they're not done at quarterback either, but Winston going there is interesting. Chances of success. Funny you say Rodgers is going to be Rodgers. Winston is going to be Winston, right? There's going to be highs and lows.
It's going to be fun for your purposes, right, with fantasy coaches.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you know, Malik Nabers is probably going to like 3,000 yards. He'll throw the ball to your team. He'll throw the ball to the other team. It's going to be entertaining. I don't know if he's going to be the starter, though. I wouldn't be surprised if they signed Russell Wilson, right? The quarterback competition that Joe Shane and Brian Daboll were absolutely anticipating 4 years into this regime. Jameis Winston against.
So I read in USA Today that the majority of people stop GLP-1 weight loss injection shots in a year. Now, what's concerning is if you get off GLP-1s, there's a real chance you can gain all the weight back. The solution? Alma said, a natural superfood protein shake. University studies show it optimizes your metabolism so you can lose weight easily, and Alma said it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Use Alma said with GLP-1s or as a natural alternative. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least 3 times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Russell Wilson, it's another team. In their case, it just seems like terrible timing. I mean, we could go through it year to year, but to win early, I mean, it backed them into a corner with Daniel Jones, and you're out of range of a quarterback in the draft. It's just been an awful cataclysmic series of events for that GM, that coach. I think they have to draft somebody, though. I'm not sure if Shedeur Sanders is worth the third overall pick. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Bob gleans from the scouts, but whether it's him at some point in the first round or a Jackson Dart, I got to think that they draft somebody and give Daboll the opportunity to coach that player. Like, that's why you hired this GM and this coach. It's all of the work they did discovering, recruiting, identifying Josh Allen as the guy, and then in Daboll's case, developing him into arguably the greatest player in the sport. So who is that in this class? I don't have a clue. But if Daboll has an opinion, if Shane has an opinion, like, you've got to find that guy. You've got to get that guy. And you just have to show something this year. I don't know if they have to win, like make the playoffs or they're out kind of deal. But they've got to show that things are moving in the right direction. And they've actually drafted some decent players last year. Their class was full of talent. If they can do something positive at quarterback in the draft, I think they have their jobs beyond this year.
Interesting. Shedeur Sanders is realistic from both angles, I think, team and player. Dad says he wants him there. Deion got a question about what's the best case scenario in his mind, and he said New York. So maybe we get that at pick three. The trade up seems less likely because now Tennessee reportedly is all over Cam Ward. So for a minute, there was the Giants moving up for him, and now it looks like, who knows, but it looks like maybe they're not going to have that chance. Tyler, before you go, golongtd.com, the draft series, and what else can we look forward to?
Oh, man. Yeah, Bob's series is great. We'll have that run in the next 2 weeks. And this is just a great time of year to kind of chip away at some longer stories. I've got a couple that I've been working on, you know, conversations with scouts and coaches. And without giving too much away, we'll have some pretty big stories, let's say, in a month or so. It kind of depends. You never really know when the right time is. But, you know, guys have time on their hands to talk and reflect and tell you stuff that they're not necessarily going to broadcast at a podium. So that's always the goal.
Makes sense. Very good. Thanks, as always, for your time, Tyler.
Hey, thank you, Mike.
All right, Tyler Dunn on the Western Hotline, golongtd.com. Yeah, these receivers, reading about these receivers at his site today, I got a little scared. But you still want to have that weapon. And if it's not the best year to draft one, well, other years were hit and miss results. Last year, for example, it's a great example. I wouldn't want to be scared off. Round two, the Bills don't have a pick in round three. You can get those. Though I think that might be about perfect for this idea for me. What is your idea for the draft? Defense is where everybody seems to be sitting. I have a tough time sort of coming up with a real opinion, one player over another, or even necessarily one position. You've got corner, interior, defensive line. We're a month away, 803-0550. I'm taking that as a reason to get back into the draft, but you know, I'll take anything for that. Love to talk about it. Want to spend some time on the tournament, too, and just the trend with all the top teams rolling here this year. So we'll get into some of that, too. Paul Hamilton in just over an hour. Lines open, Mike Schoep here, WGR.
Dane Jackson was never a preferred starter for the Bills. He started 28 games over four seasons. They've had to use him a ton. Kyrie Holmes had to play a good amount. So I think it's very important to have depth in place. I think the Bills did a good job of finding a floor with bringing in Dane Jackson, but I think they need to find some ceiling, and that's why I'm expecting probably an early investment with a draft pick to get a player that not only gives them more ceiling and upside, but, you know, as you're about to potentially pay Christian Benford a big-time contract, you're going to want a cost-control player that's secure for multiple years. I think you accomplish that with a draft pick.
Joe Marino on our morning show last week. Mike Schoep here. Bulldog is off. Lines open for you, 803-0550. The NFL draft is one topic that we're on today and probably will be on and into every day for a month until the draft opens. Round one is 1 month from tonight. I like the conversation about the tournament because, like talking about this with Sal earlier, you do lose something when it's so top heavy, when the top teams are just too good for the mid-major teams, and really just like more than that. You have lesser size teams that have had big tournament moments over the years and shocking upsets. And then even, you know, within some of the bigger conferences, teams that are just not like on the highest level. You want upsets. We kind of always want what we don't get. Upsets are great when you're watching them, when you're watching them play out, and the game goes along, and as it continues to go along, the underdog just won't go away, has that chance of winning, then they get it, and we have today. So now it's off until Thursday night, and you look at the matchups, and okay, well, you have two or three of these mid-major teams, and while they're an interesting story, I don't think most fans are more likely to watch them play in those games than they would be, you know, Duke or Kentucky or whoever you want for this from the top level. So if we get upsets, that's great, but then we want something else from the later rounds and vice versa. You know, you have this right now where you're going to have really elite kind of matchups going forward, but there's a charm, if you will. I mean, for all the money that's made, I don't know if charm is really the best word, but there's a certain something that you miss with, I mean, a lot of these games were just not even close. It was the most lopsided first 2 days ever by seeds, by margin of victory. Not exactly these magical moments that we love the tournament for, hardly any in the first 4 days. You had Maryland last night, and, you know, that probably should have been a walk anyway. So at least there was one, but not a lot in terms of thrills from the first weekend. I did love the Florida-Connecticut game. I watched a lot of that, and Connecticut played that underdog role. They were a 9.5-point underdog. They're also the two-time defending national champions. They're not exactly a plucky no-name, right? UConn. But they made Florida work for it. I'm attached to Florida. I have a friend, Carlin Hartman, who I went to high school with, is on the Florida bench, and so I'm rooting for him. He, by the way, took over the post-game interview when they've got the head coach there and the one-star player, and Carlin just got the team together. They went over, he hugged the coach. He got in the shot. He did a great job there. But they did make Florida work for it. Florida was really struggling throughout the game. UConn was just like, no mistakes, their kind of game. But Florida did, to its credit. But again, that underdog element is missing. And it's funny, on Friday, I think it was, I was talking about, just right at the end of the show, I had a thought, whether it was about the tournament, but then I thought about the NFL and all major sports, how it seems that we're always talking about something that has changed and not for the better. But the sports just continue to thrive. More money all the time, TV rights, popularity. And you wonder, maybe, something to think about, what breaks it? And I said on Friday, like, even hockey. For all the complaining we always do, people who care about hockey, this or that with rules and television and just different things, you know, they're seemingly in a pretty good place. Franchise values way up from what they used to be. So complaining about some of this stuff kind of feels like a waste of time. Baseball with replay and different things. Replay is everywhere, and it's usually terrible. And for me, the NCAA tournament reviews, especially the ones where they're checking the clock at the end of games, you know, toward the end of games, that for me is the worst review in sports. It's somebody brought to me, you know, the obvious candidate, offside challenges in hockey that just are so infinitesimal differences and almost indetectable or undetectable, and often also irrelevant to the play, but we've got to call the goal back. An actual fun moment in a hockey game, can't have it sometimes. That's bad. You're right. But these clock ones, I did the speech on Friday. The whole game, there's a split second between the whistle and the stopping of the clock. It's just, it has to be like that. It's not automatic by the whistle. Somebody's running the clock. So there's a split second every time that we do not ever think about or care about. Yet we get to the end of the game and we got to make sure that point, that 9.1 seconds needs to be 9.4. Just, I wish we just didn't bother with that. Sure, sometimes somebody forgets or mistakenly keeps the clock running, and that can be something where you have to change that. But these tenths of seconds changes that we stop for. There was one yesterday. I was driving in the first, I guess it was the same game, Florida, and maybe like 15-11 was the score or something like that. And the referee called goaltending, and then they reviewed it, and they're having this conversation on the radio broadcast. Okay, well, they called it a basket, so that means that it has to be, just like in every other sport, has to be obvious, has to be clear evidence that it wasn't goaltending. And the announcer's like, well, there really wasn't that, but they, you know, they took it away anyway. It's all just talk. And I don't know, do we need a basket with 10 minutes to go in the first half? Do we need the game to be stopped and have that be reviewed? I know. To complain about replay is also just mostly a waste of time because it's only getting more prevalent. It's never going away. We will never, I would love to have it happen just to see what it would feel like and be like anymore, but we are probably never having again. We're taking replay out of sports. I doubt it. But you know, the tournament, you love the upsets, the potential for upsets. the great moments, buzzer beaters, even if they're not a clear favorite versus an underdog. Christian Laettner in Duke, Kentucky, it's the first great moment in the tournament that ever comes to my mind, whatever, 91 or 92, whatever year that was. And that's Duke, Kentucky. That's not St. Joseph's or George Mason or somebody like that. I mean, that's just an epic game between two legendary programs. We still have the potential for that. How much worse does it get? If it could get, if you will, worse. How much worse does it get? Like, more and more transfer portal guys kind of abandoning the mid-major teams for bigger opportunities and bigger programs. Does it get worse than this, where you have the one seeds and the favorites just rolling? I don't want to assume it will always be like this, because this is one year, but it is logical that this would happen because of the changes in the sport. And so you're going to have, what, better peak teams and just weaker in the middle. It's just logical that it would be like this. I just don't think it's great. I think the intentions are good. I think how we got here is good, but you'd like to have it be more competitive. You want, it's just not how it is, but you want it to be any sport, whatever it is we're talking about, the rules, the format, anything, playoffs, you want it to be what's best for the fans. That's why they exist. They exist for the pleasure of the fans, for us to spend time and money on. And so what is best for the fans? And what you get usually is not exactly what's best for the fans. You just get more. You get more playoff teams in football. You get more college football, baseball. You get more playoff teams all the time. You get more teams. That's not necessarily bad. But, more playoffs, I don't think we really need that. I don't think it's better. Baseball isn't better because you have six teams now per league, I think it is. I'm only pretty sure. Six per league make the playoffs. And all that does is, it also gives other teams a shot at it. But, okay, it just cheapens the season. It makes it less important that for 6 months of the regular season that you actually have to be really good. You can be pretty good and make it. And then, who knows, it's best of three. And anything can happen like that in baseball. So what's best for the competition, what's best for the structure, what's best for the fans, not even often what we usually get. This trend in the tournament is not great for us. I think bottom line, it ends up like that. At least, though, you get, for the teams that are left, you get great matchups. So, good and bad. 803-0550 for your calls. Get back to football here as we continue. Paul Hamilton at 5:30. This is Mike Shope on WGR. Right now it is contest time. Caller 5, 716-221-4WGR. That's 4947. Wins two tickets to see Disturbed with Daughtry and Nothing More at KeyBank Center next Friday, April 4th. There you go again. Courtesy of Live Nation. That's a week from this Friday. So it's next Friday. Get your tickets while you can at Ticketmaster.com. Your call's coming up as we get them. 803-0550. Paul at 5:30. Sabres home to Ottawa tomorrow night after splitting on the weekend. I'm not sure if it was Saturday or yesterday, the game notes the Sabres put out, they list their injuries. And, hockey forever, 20 years or more, it's been lower body, upper body. For Josh Norris, they write it as undisclosed. I mean, that's shorter for was hurt when we traded for him, I suppose. But is there maybe like an extra level of mystery around Norris? I don't know. Would it be because of his status coming over from Ottawa? Bulldog thought to ask Kevin Adams after the trade and his cousins and the Senators here tomorrow about Norris, and it was a good question. Like, how do you guys trade information on the medical stuff? Like, what happens in that scenario? And Adams said how the Senators doctor and the Sabres doctor had a conversation. Like, there is information that's shared there, but it seemed the consensus on Norris would be One, he wasn't going to be traded if not for this injury history he has, which is becoming a problem, I think. And, you know, or just another way, would have gotten a lot more in a trade if that's what Ottawa had been inclined to do. I think you could get Norris because of the injury stuff. And the Sabres did. I think he's an exciting player, but if it's chronic, like, I don't know. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, though. Just interesting how they officially, on the Sabres' own release, describe it as undisclosed. You could also almost read that as Norris won't tell them what his injury is, which I doubt is it. He won't tell us, so it's undisclosed. Again, Paul coming up at 5:30. I saw today that this is the 20th anniversary of the debut of The Office. 20 years ago tonight, the premiere of The Office aired on NBC. I remember how I got into it. It was a friend's recommendation. Isn't that like the most common way you get into a show? Is somebody tells you that they love it. Oh, I'm obsessed with Severance. You know, you got to watch this. Bulldog was into Severance. And I know that was on Apple, which we didn't have until it just happened that we bought something. And now we have Apple for like a month or whatever. And started watching Severance. And now, like, super fan. I think with The Office, I think it was Brad Reiter. I think Brad was the one who told me that maybe he watched The Office UK with Ricky Gervais and loved it. I hope that's right. But I know with Lost, it was my sister Betsy who was raving about Lost. I'm like, okay, you know, glad you like it. But then she bought me for Christmas maybe the DVDs. It's that far back. The box set, season one. And I had a sick day where my wife had gone to work. I'm not even sure the kids were around yet. And I just popped one in and I kind of wanted to fall asleep, but I couldn't. Ended up watching like 11 of them in a row one day. So I think that's probably the number one way where you get hooked into a show is somebody. It doesn't have to be someone you know necessarily. Maybe it's someone you listen to. They mention it. Like Trista tells us the Day of the Jackal. She wants us to watch the Day of the Jackal. So I guess probably I will do that. I didn't watch Top Gun for her though. First one of these she ever gave us was you got to go see the new Top Gun Maverick. And all right, I probably could find my way to that. Never did. Never did. Mike Chopier, Bulldog, is away this week. Let's get into the draft some more. What do you want? I'm always asking the same things, but want, not want. What's like, I've said already today, like, I'm having a little bit of a struggle coming to, like, all right, answering my own question, I guess, in the end is what it is. I want this player or I want this position because for all the merits of defensive line, corner, you know, the sort of the obvious areas of concern, relative concern at least for the Bills, how much better does it make them? I think that the two positions themselves are different from each other, but I want to spend some more time on the draft here. 1 month from tonight is round one. Again, lines are open for your calls. This is WGR.